But as I mentioned, concentration is not only horizontal, it's vertical. The conscious mind must be integrated with the subconscious mind. And how is this to be achieved? It's achieved by having recourse to an object of concentration, an object on which one learns to concentrate one's whole attention, an object into which the energies of the subconscious are allowed to be gradually absorbed. And these concentration objects, even in Buddhism alone, are of many different kinds, and there's no time even to enumerate all of them. There are several hundred. But I'll just mention some of the best known concentration objects, just so as to give everybody a general idea. But before I do that, I want to say something about a very important intermediate step. The meditator, a would-be meditator, having integrated his consciousness, his conscious mind, having achieved this horizontal integration, has now reached a very, as it were, crucial stage. He's about to make a very important transition. A transition from the world or plane of sensuous experience to the world or plane of mental and spiritual thought. But he's held back. There are five things which still hold him back, and these are known as the five mental hindrances. And the five mental hindrances have to be suppressed before the stage of absorption can be entered upon. Have to be, that is, temporarily suppressed, because they can be permanently suppressed or eradicated only when insight has been attained. And the five mental hindrances are best suppressed before one has recourse to the subject of concentration. Otherwise, they'll disturb you as you're trying to concentrate on it, trying to allow your energy to be absorbed by it. And the five mental hindrances are, first of all, the desire for sensuous experience. The desire for experience through the five physical senses. Desire for agreeable visual, auditory, olfactory, gustatory, and tactile sensation. Especially agreeable sensations connected with food and with sex. So long as desires of this sort are present in the mind, no transition to the stage of absorption is possible. One cannot really occupy oneself with the concentration object. And then secondly, hatred. This is a feeling of ill will and resentment that arises when one's desire for sensuous experience is frustrated. And sometimes this feeling of hatred is directed towards the object of the desire itself. And then thirdly, sloth and torpor. This, we may say, is the inertia that keeps us on the plane of sensuous desire, on our ordinary, everyday consciousness level. It's a sort of animal-like stagnation, both mental and physical. And fourthly, the opposite, restlessness and worry. The opposite of sloth and torpor. This is the inability to settle down to anything for very long. It's a state of continually fussing and bothering, but never really getting anything done. And then fifthly and lastly, there's doubt. And this is not a sort of honest intellectual doubt, this is more like indecision. It's even an unwillingness to make up one's mind, an unwillingness to commit oneself. It's a lack of faith, a lack of trust, a reluctance to acknowledge that there is a higher state of consciousness for man to achieve. So these are the five mental hindrances. The hindrances which must be allowed to subside of which must be suppressed before one takes up the concentration object and prepares to enter upon the stage of absorption. And we know only too well that our mind is very, very often obscured and contaminated by these five mental hindrances. And there's a quite interesting traditional simile for the mind as contaminated by the five mental hindrances. The mind itself is compared to water, water in its natural state. So when the mind becomes contaminated by desire, then it's said to be like water in which various bright colours have been mixed. It's pretty, perhaps, but the purity and translucency of the water have been lost. And then the mind which is contaminated by hatred. This, we are told, is like water that has been brought to the boil, which is hissing and bubbling and steaming. That's why we say perhaps that when we get angry we get all steamed up. And then the mind contaminated by sloth and torpor is said to be like water choked with a thick growth of weeds so that nothing can get through. And then the mind contaminated by restlessness and worry, like water which has been whipped up into waves by the wind, even by a great storm. And then the mind which is contaminated by doubt, by uncertainty, and so on, is like water full of mud. So when these five hindrances are suppressed, the mind, the conscious mind, becomes like pure water. It becomes cool. And in India, coolness is a synonym for spiritual attainment, even gaining enlightenment. They say, he's become cool. You wouldn't use this sort of idiom, of course, in a cold country. You might use it in New Zealand, especially in weather like this. He's become cool. So the mind here becomes cool. It becomes calm. And it becomes clear. And it's now ready to take up an object of concentration, ready to become absorbed. And as I've already mentioned, concentration objects are of very many kinds. And I'll mention just a few. Some are rather ordinary and everyday, others are rather extraordinary. First of all, there's the breath. Your own breath can be your object of concentration. You can concentrate on your breath as it comes in and goes out. There are various methods of doing this, several different techniques. I'm not going to go into them now. And then, another object of concentration, a very important one, is sound. Especially the sacred sound that we call mantra. This is a very important object of concentration. And then one can take up as object of concentration a disc. A disc of very pure, bright colour. Red, or blue, or green, and so on, according to temperament, according to the tradition of practice. Again, one can make one's object of concentration a piece of human bone, preferably a good-sized piece, so you have a good, solid object of concentration. And then you can take up an idea, can take up the concept of a particular virtue to be cultivated, such as generosity. And again, you can take something quite ordinary and mundane. You can concentrate on the flame of a lamp or a candle. And again, one can concentrate on various, as it were, psychic centers within one's own body. Or one can concentrate on a mental image, maybe a very vivid mental image or picture of the Buddha himself, or a great bodhisattva, or a great teacher. And on all of these objects, the mind can become concentrated. In all of these objects, whether the breath, the sound, the mantra, the flame, the image or picture of the Buddha, etc., in all of these, the mind can become absorbed, even deeply absorbed. And of course, it goes without saying that one doesn't have to practice with each and every one of these objects. As I said, there are even thousands of them. So it is possible for several different concentration objects to be combined, seriatim, in one particular system or tradition of meditation practice. And also, of course, the different objects of concentration and the practice of meditation with the help of the different objects of concentration can be combined with some of the indirect methods of raising the level of consciousness, particularly, for example, with chanting and with ritual. Now, if one proceeds in this way, if one integrates the conscious mind with itself, if one integrates the conscious mind with the unconscious, if one suppresses the five mental hindrances, if one takes up an object or objects of concentration, if one's deeper energies start flowing more and more powerfully into the object of concentration, then a great change will take place. The level of consciousness will start definitely rising. Rising from the world or plane of sensuous experience to the world or plane of mental and spiritual thought. In other words, one will begin to pass from the first to the second stage of meditation. From meditation in the sense of concentration to meditation in the sense of absorption.